Bada bing, bada boom. All right, we're live. Parker Dean, welcome to the show, dude. Thanks for being here, man.
I appreciate you having me on, Jay.
Parker Dean, not to be confused with, I mean, that's pretty straightforward, dude. Parker's a pretty good name. If I'm in the club or if I'm like at a bar and I'll be like, yo, my name's Jay. They'll be like, Jake? No, Jay. Jake? Yeah. You get two chances and I'll be like, yeah, Jake. All right, whatever. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
So, dude, why don't you go ahead and tell us about who you are? Like, what do you do as a profession?
So, I do two things mainly. So, I have a couple of side things going as well, but the two main, you know, just like everybody else in LA, I guess you could say. But I do two main things. The first of which is I'm a stand-up comedian. I'm a professional stand-up comedian, which means I have been and do get paid to do comedy on stage. I'm based out in Los Angeles. I performed at the Comedy Store a half dozen times, as well as the Ice House up in Pasadena. And most recently, the biggest one I've done was the Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club in Las Vegas, which was a ton of fun. That was back in July. So I do a lot of stand-up. I post all over social media, do a lot of TikTok live streaming, just everything comedy. The other thing, main thing that I do, I have a business where I teach. Basically, I teach communication to business professionals. And I've built that coaching practice out of a lot of the principles and exercises and games that I've learned doing years and years of live theater and stand-up and improv.
So from the get-go, like, how did you get into comedy?
Man, it's something I wanted to do ever since I was a kid. Like, yeah. Honestly, it's something that I always just loved laughter. And even when I was doing... I have a big background in live theater, man. From the time I was like in middle school or high school, I was still doing live theater and choir and stuff. And I was always in it for the laughs. But stand-up always scared me a lot to do. So it took me a really, really long time to go through a lot of different types of arts to finally land on stand-up about 2.5 years ago. And it's been I've been having a ball ever since.
Dude, you got to go through the gauntlet. Like, there's no easy way to do stand-up comedy. You're going to fuck up.
Yeah, you're not kidding. I mean, the quicker you, I guess the higher your willingness to go through that cringe state of just being bad, or not even necessarily bad, just not very good for a couple, you know, maybe a year, maybe a couple months, however long it takes. I mean, it sometimes it takes a while, but if you're willing to go through that, what exists on the other side is amazing.
True. Yeah, and sometimes, like, even if it's your very first time on stage, it can be addicting if you get, like, a little chuckle or something from the audience. Like, you're seeing something, you know? Like, you don't even have your voice yet. Like, don't expect to be amazing or, like, a killer right away. You don't even know what the fuck you sound like. You don't know what works, what doesn't work. But coming from you, man, like, when you're talking about you like making people laugh, was that because you like seeing like a family member laugh, like from the earliest stages? Was it because you wanted to see your mom chuckle, your dad chuckle, your friends? Was it something along those lines?
I think really early on, you know what it was? I think it was acceptance with groups of boys. I think it was trying to fit in at school. I think is really what it really, really was. I just noticed that a lot of the social circles, all the cool kids at my, you know, in my middle school and stuff, I think I just noticed that they always were just laughing with each other. And I think when I started to figure out that I could make my friends laugh and that seemed to really get me acceptance, I think that I really just kind of latched onto that. Like, oh, this can be my role in the group of people. I can make everyone laugh. Like, this is okay, cool. I have a job that I can do here and I like it and it makes everyone feel good. It makes me feel good. I feel good when I laugh and I feel good when I make other people laugh. So it's all around just a winning plan, I think, at least at that time.
Same here. Yeah, I really enjoy that. And it's interesting. So do you think you surround yourself with like-minded people or do you kind of like to get like a diverse set of crowd, I guess? Like, meaning, do you like sarcastic people around you or do you like people like that like, you're not particular in what you're looking for?
I really try to curate the people who are close to me to be positive people. I realize, you know, I went through a lot of years of theater, and still in stand-up, there's a lot of self-loathing that floats around the stand-up community and stuff. But I realized that I'd kind of, once I got out of doing live theater when I had moved to LA and I kind of started to pursue some film, and then I had just, I'd kind of taken a break from doing a lot of artistic things for a minute. And I, when I say break, like I was still going to class, or I was still, like I was at the Groundling School for a minute and stuff, but I wasn't really in the middle of doing any live theater. I wasn't in the middle of doing any productions. I was more focused at that point on building my business and stuff. And so it was kind of like I was a fish out of water and I was doing my own thing. And then I reconnected with some old theater friends of mine. And what was fascinating is I found that a lot of the conversations I had, it was almost like there was not passive aggression or anything, but there was just a little bit of, like, I don't, negativity, or just a little bit of, it just, I hate to say like poison drips, but it was just like, oh, it's not that they don't want me to be successful, but there's just this like subtle tearing down that a lot of artists do to each other in conversations. And I didn't like it, man. I really didn't like it. And
what
it
do
was
think
a
that's
really
all about?
Clear, yeah. It's, I don't know. I just, it was a very clear indication of me of, oh, this, you know, these business people that I'm working with, my students that I'm working with, you know, the friends that I have out in LA now, it's a very different attitude towards success and really other people's success than maybe people I've known in my past and people that I've done theater with in the past. And so for me, it was a really clear indication of, oh, that you can surround yourself with people who don't even allow into the lexicon of their language negative stuff or stuff that subtly puts you down. Yeah. And then there's just, you know, other people that have that. So I really, to answer your question, I know it's a long-winded answer, but to answer your question, I really do try to curate the circle of people that I let into my world that I have really close to me. It's people that I want to be excited for that they're succeeding, and I want them to be excited for me when I succeed as well.
Yeah, that's wonderful. No, that was a great answer. That was great. Yeah, even just like those little drips of negativity can cause self-doubt. And when you're doing something this artistic, like when you're putting yourself out there, like being the only person on stage, like the last thing you need is self-doubt. That will murder you. So I completely understand what you're saying. That was a great answer, man. You said you're looking for people that like want success, like happy people around you. I totally get that. That's really good. Same here. I do like sarcastic people, but if they have a mindset that I can tell is toxic, I'll have them removed out of my life completely. Like, just, you got to get away from me, because I will follow that footstep. So I know myself so well that if I, like, I have these tendencies that I tend to be a follower, and if someone's negative, I'll just fucking go right into that too, and I'll start dwelling with that person. So I gotta keep it clean and fresh in my life.
Yeah, they say the best salesmen are easily sold. You know, the people who are good at doing the thing are tend to be pretty susceptible to other people. I've found that certainly in my life. But it's, yeah, bro, I want to have a good life. I want to have a lot of success. I want to enjoy myself. And so I feel like you got to curate the people around you. And some of them, you know, you never want to be a dick. You never want to be too rude or mean. Like, I've never blatantly like blocked people or cut people off that are like that. I just purposely choose to spend more time and more investment on people who are not only concerned with their own success, but are just, I don't know, have a good attitude toward life. You know, it's like, bitch, don't kill my vibe. I'm having a good time.
Right. Sure.
Let me do me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you, man. And I mean, there's a reason why you are in the position you're in. I mean, what you're doing is working. Did you see that roadmap that you're currently living, I guess, from somebody? Did you have like a mentor or anything?
No, I definitely have had mentors throughout my life. That would be ignorant to be like, nope, it's been all me the entire time. But when you said in terms of like one person who I followed a roadmap of particularly, it's a hard no on that. I have a very strange life. Like, I don't even say that with ego. I just mean objectively, it's been an interesting ride. I would have never thought, if you had asked me 5 years ago, you know, what's life going to look like? Because I graduated college. Yeah, a little over 5 years ago. If you'd asked me when I graduated college, Or do you see yourself living in Hollywood, doing stand-up, you know, doing about a show a week for a lot of people? Do you see yourself running a business where you're basically running improv exercises and teaching people, really wealthy people or people who run businesses, salespeople? Do you see yourself doing that? Do you see yourself traveling to different cities and doing stand-up? I'd be like, no, I would have never guessed that. It's been interesting.
What did you see yourself doing?
I had asked you that five years ago. At that time, I had no concept of 5 years down the line. I just was interested in living an interesting, strange, fun life and getting good stories, which I still am. But now I am more focused on where my career is headed. Now that I'm living the life I want to live and I'm doing really what I want to do.
You know, okay, so now that you can forecast a little bit better, it seems like, where do you see yourself in 5 years from now?
Great question. I know it's weird. I probably should be better at time constraints in terms of goal setting. Like, oh, but 5 years, I'd like to have this thing.
Yeah, you don't gotta be. I mean, damn.
Yeah, 100%. I definitely see myself traveling around the country doing stand-up comedy. I definitely see myself playing for really, really big rooms of people. Probably at that point, I'll have a really large social media following where I think I'll be selling tickets straight off of my social media as opposed to having to do outreach by myself. Hopefully I'll just have fans that are coming out. I see myself having probably have monetized my social media in a way that just allows me to kind of live off of my social media. As far as my business goes, I see myself being a millionaire by the time I turn 30. So that's going to be in the next 3 years. So that's in terms of like where I want to go with stand-up. Playing huge rooms of people and traveling around the country doing that. And as far as my business goes, I want to get my coaching business up to a 7-figure business.
That's awesome, man. That's amazing. Holy shit. Congratulations on all that. Even just having that mindset, dude, that's fucking fantastic. Good for you.
Thanks, man.
Does anything in the cards for the future? Like, does this stand out to you? Like, I want to be on Netflix or like all the comedians now are doing some kind of Netflix thing. I'm sure you've seen a bunch of that. Is that appetizing for you?
I want to be on whatever Netflix is right now, because it's not going to be Netflix in like 5 or 10 years. It's going to be some other platform that people are looking at. Like, I don't know. You know the story about Tom Segura when he got his first Netflix special? Did you ever hear that?
No, not that story. No.
He was disappointed.
Oh.
Can you believe that? He's disappointed. No. And he was disappointed because when he got his first Netflix special, it was, how long ago was that? Can I fact check myself on that actually real quick? I'm going to look that up and see the exact time that Tom Segura got his first Netflix special. So the reason why he talks about this, the reason why he says he was upset is because I'm trying to see my
2014. Does that sound right?
2014. Yeah, it was about 10 years ago. Let's just say that. Yeah. He gets his first stand-up special sold to Netflix about 10 years ago, and he was upset because at that time, Netflix wasn't what it is now. It was more or less a thing that he understood at the time as people were going to get his DVD mailed to their house.
Right.
Streaming, like Hulu, Netflix, like all of the big Amazon Prime, HBO Max, all the big streaming services weren't really a thing at the time, at least that way. Maybe Netflix had started investing a little bit into streaming at that time. I don't know. I don't know the history on that. But Tom was upset because he had tried to sell his comedy special, I want to say to HBO and Comedy Central, and it got rejected. And he was upset because those were the two biggest platforms of the day. And man, if you could get yourself a Comedy Central special or you could get an HBO special, you had your life made as a comedian. That's what everyone's attitude was at the time. And so his agent tried to make it happen, couldn't make it happen. And then he was in talks with this newer company called Netflix. And Tom was like, really? Like what? People are going to get my DVD mailed to their house? Like, yeah, I guess do it. And now look where he is. I mean, he's made millions and millions and millions of dollars from Netflix because then it turned into one of the biggest media platforms of all time. And so I wouldn't count out getting a Netflix special. That would certainly be cool today. I don't know if I have the material for to make a good Netflix special at the moment. I'm working on it, but I'm not hung up on yesterday's dreams. I want to be hyped about the dreams of tomorrow. I genuinely want to be, I want to be big on whatever the new big platform is. And I have a feeling, man, it's going to be something having to do with live streaming.
That's good foresight. Yeah. Do you think it'll be anything with VR?
I don't know, man. I don't really care about VR until I can be like Neo jacking into the Matrix. You know what I mean?
It's right in the main vein.
Yeah. I mean, VR is a fun novelty. It's a lot of fun. Like, you know, I don't know if you've ever, have you ever done any VR experiences like where you're shooting zombies or you're flying above a city or something?
Yeah, I've also like gone to stadiums and watched like live basketball games. So I was wondering if they would do that with stand-up comedy, stuff like that.
Bro, maybe. Who knows, man? The future is a really exciting place. I feel like more so than maybe VR, because it's like, I don't know if you saw, apparently Apple Vision Pro, they're stopping selling it. So that, I guess, was a flop, or it just wasn't as successful as they wanted to, or maybe they're moving on. I think so. That's what I read. I read a headline on Twitter, and so I'm choosing to act like it's the gospel truth on a podcast. That's what I'm doing. I'm not proud of it, but that's what I'm doing. Does it have to do with VR? I don't know, man. I just feel like live streaming, especially in the age of AI and the age of everybody has everything professionally edited, and you know, every Instagram influencer and comedian wants professional studio quality and all their stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if live streaming on TikTok, Twitch, maybe Kick. I haven't looked into a lot of the other platforms besides TikTok. TikTok's the big platform I live stream on right now. I wouldn't be surprised if stand-up takes some form of live streaming, like a pay-per-view type thing, or I don't know. But I feel like as a comedian, any comedian who's not looking into live streaming, I think you're missing out on the next big wave of entertainment.
Are you afraid of AI by any stretch of the imagination when it comes to stand-up comedy? Not for you particularly in your writing style. I'll ask you about that in a little bit. But as far as like some upcoming comedians, like what I'm worried about is people might get lazy and start inputting, you know, you'll make me a joke about this, and like the art of writing is gonna go away. I'm so scared about that. Like music too.
Maybe, man. I mean, but to a certain extent, I mean, how many pop songs are incredibly formulaic as it is, you know? I mean, I'm not a big guy in the music industry, but in terms of like, you know, just like you said, the art of writing, there is an art to writing. You read old books like F. Scott Fitzgerald, or you even look back. I studied a lot of, you know, Shakespeare in college. So people don't write like that anymore. So that's changed forms. I'm as scared of AI, I suppose, as every radio actor was when the television got introduced.
True.
You right. know, I'm as a little worrisome of like, ah, damn, this is going to change a lot. But yeah. The idea that, I don't know, man, I won't shit on or knock any actors specifically, because I know a lot of them being out here in LA. But like, people can argue with me. I just see where things are going. Like, it's AI is going to be, I had a guy, I'll tell you this story. This is fascinating, honestly. So in my work where I work with business professional teaching communication, I had a guy that I worked with, and this would have been about 2 years ago. And he's a guy who lived up in the Bay Area, and he was one of the first guys to ever really work on AI art generation. He was a software engineer. You know, do you know what Midjourney is? You heard of Midjourney, Jay, I'm sure. Yeah. So he was big into that before anybody knew what it was. He was on a conglomerate of artists who were doing artificial image generation. He spoke at Art Basel in Miami, big art festival. You know, that was, they had like a whole panel on AI art, whatever. I asked him at some point, we were working on, you know, his communication at work and stuff. And we just got into this conversation of like this side project that he was working on with AI. And again, this is 2022. So this is before ChatGPT had hit the mainstream. This is before anybody knew what Midjourney was. And I asked him about, I said, this is really fascinating what you're doing. I said, people don't believe me, because I've been talking for a little while about how with deepfake, it's going to get to a point where, you know, they're going to be able to just have a body double and stick someone else's face on the body double and just run a whole movie that way. And he's like, nah, you don't understand. He said, what's going to happen? He said, there is eventually going to come a point with this technology where you're going to be able to create a movie just for yourself. And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, there's going to come a point when in a computer system and a software, maybe, you are going to type in a prompt, you're going to hit a button, and then an entire 2-hour feature film is going to be produced just off of the prompt that you wanted that is tailored specifically to your preferences. He said, that's going to happen. I was like, whoa. So I heard that way back, 2 years ago before all this, before you started, Sora now can make little 10-second animations, and you can use image generation with ChatGPT and Midjourney. So I was thinking about this a couple of years ago, and at the time it's a bit daunting, but I don't know, man. I'm not too jaded or too negative about where the future is headed. You know what stayed around since ancient Greece? Live theater.
Yeah, sure has.
Live music performance. Stand-up is a relatively... Live performance
will be okay, for sure. Yeah. I think it's the movies that have a bigger issue.
Cinema. I agree, but what people don't seem to understand is that movies are new relatively in the media landscape, meaning like a 2-hour feature film wasn't really a thing until like the early 1900s. Like film really only was invented. The idea of a moving picture was invented in the late 1800s. I want to say the 1890s. I might be getting my film history wrong on that. But like, we've had a really fun run with it all. I just think it's not so much, just like people go see opera. I mean, opera is a very old art form, but it still persists to this day. I'm sure people are still going to make independent movies. A24 is releasing a lot of really interesting stuff right now. It seems like they're taking a lot of risk. It's a lot of fun.
That's my
jam. Feel like I hate to, I don't want to say negative things and stuff, but I do feel like the idea of the summer blockbuster, when like Arnold Schwarzenegger was in Terminator 2 and like everybody went and saw that one movie, that's long gone, man. It's different now. That whatever movies are going to turn into, they're probably still going to hang around. There's not going to be as many movies that are produced, but there's going to be other new media that's invented. Where that leaves actors, I'm not quite sure.
I see that comes out is Marvel. I don't even watch those movies, and it's like everything I see is a goddamn superhero movie. I'm sorry if you like them. I don't, but there's just too many of them. There's like 14 Spider-Mans. Like
watch them, man. I'm a big Batman fan, so if there's any Batman movies that come out, I'll probably watch it. But like, I didn't even go watch the new Flash movie where Michael Keaton was Batman again. So it's like, I don't know. I enjoyed for the most part the new Batman movie. I think it's really exciting. I love
Pattinson, the character. I think his name is, right?
Yeah, Robert Pattinson. Yeah, I had a really great time in the theater seeing that. And I think there's an art to, or there's the idea of going to see a movie in the theater. I think a lot of movie theaters are probably going to close down, but I do think that there's still going to be some movie theaters stay around. When you look at film history, what happened was you had radio, like every family had a radio in their house back in like the 20s and the 30s and stuff. And then, the 40s was like one of the golden ages of that. And it was also the golden age, one of the golden ages of, I think they call it the silver age actually, of film, because there was all these great movies that were produced, but no one had a TV yet. And so on the weekend, there was just all these new movies that would come out, and there was all these independent small movie houses, they called them at the time. And you would go over the weekend and you go see a movie. And that was the thing that everyone did. And then all of a sudden, everybody got a TV in their house, and that changed everything. All these small independent movie theaters, they got shut down, or they had to, survive. So they turned them into porn houses in like the 70s.
Hell yeah, brother.
So they did what they had to do to survive. But the movie industry went through a massive shift when television was introduced. There was no such thing as television pre like 1950s, right? Really? So, that's a whole new exciting thing. I feel like the idea of anything live, man, whether it's live streaming, whether it's a live experience, there was no such thing as escape rooms really 10 years ago. Am I wrong on that? There's new excite, like live theater, bro. I have a friend of mine who's in Atlanta, and
unless you were really kidnapped by somebody.
Yeah. Wait, what's that again? Sorry.
So unless you were really kidnapped by somebody, there was no escape room 10 years ago.
That's a good point. I have a friend of mine who's a working actor in Atlanta, and most of the acting gigs he gets are live theatrical stuff. He was an actor in, I won't say who, I don't know if he's allowed to say, he was an actor in the John Wick Experience in New York City. So, you know, they set up a whole pop-up Continental so fans of John Wick could, like, go to the actual hotel, and he played a hitman in that. He was in a live theater experience called the Mad Hatter, and it was, like, a dinner theater type thing as far as I know. But I feel like no one's seen that really before, you know? And so I feel like maybe that would become much more a thing where actors are able to go to and still be able to act as characters and stuff. But
yeah, that's a great point. Like a murder mystery dinner for Halloween, stuff like that. Or just
And that's to me, that's exciting. I don't know. I guess if your dream as a child was to grow up and be a character or be a famous actor, get your name on a star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame, get an Oscar. That is a little bit sad because the industry is changing, and I don't know if that has as much revere as it had 30 years ago. So that's a little bit sad, but you know, it's sad in the same way, you know, your favorite, again, I just go back to it. Your favorite radio show probably got taken down back in the 40s or the 50s because TV became more popular. So all those old studios changed. So yeah, I'm not too worried about where the future is headed. People are still going to want to be entertained. And I think live entertainment is going to be a big thing. So I don't know. I think the future is more exciting than it is scary. But I think if you try to process all of the changes that are going to come in your head, it gets a little bit overwhelming.
So you when you're dealing with business people, like what type of aspects are you working on there? Is that like public speaking sort of things?
Yeah, it's. You know, it's funny. I love working with people on public speaking, but that is just a small amount of what people come to work with me on. Oh. A lot of times, man, it's analytical guys who want to be better at being creative. It's people who want to be more quick-witted, be funnier, be able to spontaneously solve problems at work. And then two, I do work with guys on their personal relationships as far as dating goes. I'll work with guys, not even necessarily on dating, but their work relationships. Like sometimes I just had a student of mine who worked for a major car company here in the US, and he needed to be better at making presentations for work for, you know, the higher ups and stuff. And so I worked with him on that. But yeah, it's anybody who needs a better, you know, basically a better mouthpiece, better at communication. That's what I specialize in with my business.
Gotcha. Yeah. I was just curious. I'm really curious about like how you decided to go that route as well. Like you were doing stand-up comedy, you were in theater, and then all of a sudden you had this idea that popped in your head, like I can probably monetize this and help people out by using, you know, my abilities and my expertise. So you opened you started a business.
Something really bugged me when I was doing theater in college, and it was this. I saw, and it's a pattern all throughout. I shouldn't just nail it to college because it definitely exists outside of that. But it's when I first saw the pattern. And the pattern is this. I see these people who are much more even talented than me, who are brilliant communicators, who can be on stage in front of hundreds, if not thousands of people. They can memorize books of scripts. They can memorize Shakespeare. They have beautiful singing voices. They're incredibly talented. They're funny. All of it. They got it all. And yet, as soon as they stepped off stage, their personal lives would fall apart. It was like, why is that? How is that possible that someone who's this good, who has this much charisma on stage, when it comes to their personal relationship? I mean, look, you don't have to throw a rock very far down the street from my house to come across that. I mean, look at, you know, Will Smith, Jada Pinkett Smith. That's not an uncommon, the idea of perhaps might be an unhealthy relationship dynamic that doesn't seem to be too uncommon in the entertainment industry. So I was like, that's interesting. Why is that the case that we can't take these really brilliant communication principles, the idea of running these theater games, why does it have to be sequestered to the stage? And then later on, when I was in LA, I worked at this amazing distillery called Lost Spirits Distillery. I did a lot. I did their customer service on the emails. I worked in the gift shop. I worked in the warehouse. I also was a tour guide. It was a really, really fun job.
Were you the only employee? Jesus.
No, we all did everything. That was the cool thing about Lost Spirits is we all got experience working in every aspect. And what I noticed, the brilliance of Lost Spirits, the distillery, was their whole draw of the distillery, outside of how great the spirits were themselves, was the fact that the tour was exciting. They basically took their distillery and kind of turned it into Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, nice.
So it was a fun tour. There was, again, like experiential entertainment, live entertainment. It was not only come out and try this amazing, really well-designed spirits, but it was also, you're going to have a really fun evening doing it. It's going to be really a really great time. And so they had a lot of elements of improv in their business, in that I worked in the gift shop, for example. And usually when you work in the gift shop in any sort of distillery, or I don't know, you're at a winery, it's just going to be a standard kind of room. There's going to be shelves of liquor, and there's going to be a customer service person that stands or sits behind a desk. And then people are going to come up and just decide for themselves whether or not they want to buy liquor. And that's cool. That's fine. That works for most places. But what Lost Spirits did was they themed the gift shop. So I worked in the gift shop a lot. And what they did was, when the guests arrived at the end of the tour inside the gift shop, what they did was it's so cool. They had all of these little electronic birds that they had hidden throughout the room. And then when all the guests arrived, we hit a button and then the birds put on kind of like a show. It was really, really cool. And so it was the idea of yes and. Yes, we're going to have a gift shop. We're going to sell liquor. We're going to do what everyone else is doing. And why not make it also entertaining and fun and make the guests have a good time while they're there? And I was like, that's interesting. I just saw the parallel, because I was taking class at the Groundling School at the time, of improv, of yes and, of theater. And I was like, huh, so this is applicable in a startup. This is applicable in the business world as well. And then, you know, COVID hit and everything. I started my business right at the beginning of COVID. So I started it really in July of 2020. I started getting paid to teach in September of 2020. And what I thought was, huh, I see all these guys that I'm, you know, networked with. I wonder if there's a way to take the improv games, the improv principles specifically, and all these other theatrical principles I know. I wonder if running improv games would be useful for people. And I thought it would be useful for people that are just normal, your average business guys, engineers, sales guys, guys who run businesses, CEOs. Like, I wonder if that would be useful. And it kind of caught on from there. I got a reputation in some networking groups I was in, and people really liked how I taught. And so it kind of took off from there, word of mouth wise. And that's kind of how it all shook out. But it's when I think about the fact that not only am I doing stand up on stage and I'm, you know, using improv when, you know, someone drops a glass or something in the audience, and or I have to add a recovery line when the joke that I tried didn't really get a laugh, and I'm using improv there. It's just fun that I get to use what I do on stage and also teach it to people who just want to make their lives better. I really do love that.
Yeah, that's awesome. My personal life, what I do for a job to get paid outside of this is we do compliance and ethics, but in a comedy way. So it's like the sexual harassment, it's like these privacy laws, but we grab people from Second City and they help us record and make content for, like, you know, pharmaceutical companies or whatever, these Fortune 500 That's companies. Amazing. Yeah. That's so amazing. Kind of sounds similar. We do live events as well, you know, just
that's awesome.
Yeah, teach their staff, like, you know, build confidence and what to, like, speak up culture, stuff like that, in a funny kind of way.
Adding humor to it probably makes that type of stuff that would otherwise, I've sat through some of those seminars before, a lot of it's very boring. I bet you that adding that comedic element makes it more engaging, and no wonder you're going into companies and doing that. I bet you the companies love that.
Oh yeah, dude. Yeah, but there are some companies that are like, we're more of a conservative, we don't want any of that stuff, and, you know, I understand. I mean, of course, every company is going to be different, but I mean, the example I go to is like when you go on an airplane, you know, and you kind of see someone that's more spirited instead of that monotone, like how to fasten your seatbelt, you're going to be a little bit more like eager to listen to that, like someone doing a character voice or something that's just more spirited. Yeah, you'll pay attention a little bit more.
Absolutely. I think that's brilliant. I think that's brilliant what you're doing. Let me know if you need any other actors for compliance videos.
Of course, I will. I'll hit you up offline for sure, man. That's cool.
I really do love teaching. It's a second love of mine outside of stand up and comedy itself.
Do you remember the first time that you ever taught somebody, like, not for money, but like growing up, where there was this moment where you were like, oh, I like this, I was able to teach someone something?
No, it was a gradual process, man. It was a gradual process. I definitely did, I think, some tutoring when I was a kid. You know, I was always pretty good at school, so I would help other kids with their work, you know, that I recall. But when it comes to teaching and coaching what I teach now, that's why I say I got started to get paid a couple months after I started to teach it, because I did free sessions in the beginning to kind of build out my portfolio and get some testimonials. And it was really cool to see at the very beginning. It was just pretty gratifying as a coach to just see my students. I don't know. You would just see them pause. You would see them say, you would see them panic because they didn't quite have the next thing to say. And then slowly but surely, after a session, you know, a couple sessions, that wouldn't be the case. They had improved. And then they started telling me how useful it was for them in their lives. The fact that they could speak to women better. If I'm working with men who are interested in dating, they could speak to women better. I had one guy even who told me that what I taught him helped his relationship with his children. I was like, huh, okay. This is, that's cool.
That's significant. And then,
it's significant. And it was an unexpected win. Like, oh, I never thought that as a coach, I could help a parent be better at working with their kids using collaboration and using improv exercises. That's fascinating. And when it really started to hit me, man, is when I would start to do seminars, when I would go to a live workshop and I'd be in front of a room of people and I would just be running through a bullet list of all the stuff that I wanted to talk about. And I would be bouncing ideas off the room. I'd be making the room laugh a little bit and also getting them some really good insights, and then putting people in big groups with each other where they were in multiple rooms. Say we were at like a hotel, you'd have two different conference rooms and I would have two different groups in two different rooms running the same exercise. That's when it really started to hit me. Oh, like this is not only is this a lot of fun, but I'm good at this. Like this is, I'm helping people. This feels great.
That's gratifying, man. I mean, could you imagine, this is really cool that you never saw yourself like working in a cubicle when you were young. You kind of knew what you wanted to do. You know, you didn't want to have that typical corporate job.
Some people would call it cool, Jay. Some people would also call it batshit insane. Some people say,
"No, you're right."
Would say you're out of your mind. Some people, I don't know if there's just some wire that's unhooked in my brain, but I've just never been one for convention in just about any regard.
Oh, same here, dude. You and I both, brother. I can remember when I was like in third grade, like people would open the door by pulling the handle down. I'm like, nah, I'm fucking opening it up.
Same. Exactly. So really? You understand.
Yeah, dude. Just everything would be ass backwards. I didn't want to do the typical, you know, like this is how things are supposed to be. I was like, okay, well, I don't know if that was like a rebellious or just my brain is wired backwards.
Yeah, I can't, like I said, it's not for me to say. I just kind of know how I am. I've always been interested in great stories. I've always been interested in doing things my way, I guess. I've always just been interested in, I don't know, maybe I just watched too many movies as a kid. You know, I just want to make my life like theatrical and cinematic and just different. I just never was satisfied with the standard, like, oh yeah, you know, girl, I'm from Indiana, man, so the Midwestern life.
Oh, you're my neighbor. All right. I'm from Chicago.
Yeah. I actually had family. They've moved down to Florida since, but I had family up in Deerfield too. So that's pretty close to Chicago. You know, that type of lifestyle, I can't speak for Chicago because that's more urban living. I don't know if you were in the suburbs outside of Chicago. I was raised next to a cornfield in Indiana, man. I was raised not like kind of, I don't know, about a half hour drive from Indianapolis. So kind of suburbs, but also bordering on the rural. It was a nice, calm, peaceful place to grow up, I suppose you could say. But people in that world, they just, you know, they're focused primarily on getting a stable, solid job, raising mm-hmm. really good families. They're focused on, I guess you could say, more homely or I don't know what the word is. They're more focused on what's the right word, man, that I'm looking for?
No, I know. You know what you're saying. Just like the stuff that needs to be done to like maintain a family and, you know, mm-hmm. keep order, I guess.
That, you know, now down home values or, you know, just the idea of family is very important in a place like that and stuff. So I just never, I don't know. I don't say I never fit in, but kind of, I always just wanted to do different shit. I was always very imaginative as a kid. I was always daydreaming in class and stuff. So
wonder if that's where some of it stems from, man. Like kind of like this cookie cutter, like this is the way things are supposed to be. And then it seems like we're kind of similar. We're just like, well, why? I don't want to, like, life should be much more than that. Like if I'm in charge of my reality, I want to make it fun. I want to make it like the way I want to write my own fucking story, not like something like that's like preconceived for me. That's almost how I feel. Like Okay. I had this job in the city and it was a corporate job, and I would take the train, and it was a 45-minute ride. I would go into Chicago, and it was just like this giant wave of people all wearing suits, all just clicking their feet. I'm like, holy shit, man. This is like a fucking sheep herding where everyone is just in a line going to their designated spot to like, and I understand it, man. You get like health insurance, you get a paycheck, you live a like whatever. That's for you. It was not for me. I had like this total realization and panic, like I do not need to be doing this right now. This is not me at all. And I started like I had a fucking panic attack, dude. It was like at that moment I was like, okay, we're switching gears. I'm done. I'm not doing this. This is not me. I'm not living a fake life.
Absolutely. I really relate to what you're saying. And before I was really, I think especially when I was younger and I wasn't thinking things through, I was just very anti that. Like I couldn't, you know, who could, why are you guys going to be boring? Why would you guys, whatever. I think I might've been a bit judgmental about that lifestyle. I respect it, particularly for people who have families. You know, you need to do what you need to do to raise your kids and create a good world for your children. I respect that lifestyle. It just is not for me.
Almost.
Yeah, no shit. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's not for me. I don't want it. I don't want it. And like you said, it's almost a, I felt like I was drowning, you know, when I had to sit through to bring it back to the idea of sitting through like seminars and stuff like that. I've had to sit through a couple of those just in the seminars, particularly that we were talking about in terms of compliance that companies have to put their employees through. Not necessarily the sexual harassment or diversity or whatever, but just like, hey, we're all going to get together and we all have to have a team meeting. Like I remember I got a internship for a little while as a realtor. Like I got my real estate broker license in Indiana, like towards the end of college. And the brokerage that I did, they had a team meeting every Tuesday at really early time for me. I think it was like 7 a.m. maybe. It was really early. And I couldn't stand, they're really cool people, they were nice. I just couldn't stand going to that meeting. I'm like, why are we here? I don't like it.
Yeah, dude, just sucks a little bit of your soul and kills it. Oh, man. I wonder, do you think there's a mass number of people that see things the way that we kind of see things, but are too afraid to... Like they don't have families. They could if they wanted to, but they're just afraid of making that leap.
I think that there are people who love the corporate world. I think there are people who thrive in that environment, you know, and I think those are the people that you see climb that corporate ladder, executives who just, you know, they love that competitive side of things. They like playing the office politics game. I think there's a lot of people who love that. For the people who are living that somewhat corporate life, but maybe are just making enough money to get by, I can't speak for them if their life is dominated by fear. I don't know. I don't know. But are there more people like us in that we have kind of either by, I don't want to say genetics, but like we're just made a little different. We're just not interested in that. And we take the leap and we actually try to live the conventional life. I think there's a lot of people who might be interested in taking that leap, but just choose not to. But everyone has their own expression of that, man. Maybe for that guy who's like a low-level office worker, maybe their dream is to start their own business. You know, they might not want to be an artist or something, but maybe they have something that they want to do that maybe they're thinking about making more than just a hobby. But due to fear, due to the expectations perhaps of their parents, due to the fact that Maybe they just, you know, that is a little overwhelming, the tolerance of that stress. Maybe that scares them out of it. I wouldn't be surprised if there are a lot of people who just don't take that leap because they're scared.
Do you think it could be generational as well? Like, I see a lot of young people now that are talking shit about corporate world and don't want to work 60 plus hours just to make a paycheck. What, like, people are like asking questions now about that lifestyle. Why would I work 40 hours if I'm not going to get a raise? And it's like, when I can just work from home, why would I commute into, you know, an office? Like, why can't I just work from home? There's questions being raised, you know? And yeah. I think when I was a little bit younger, those questions weren't allowed to be asked, almost. Like, you'd be looked at as you were insane. I'm a little bit older than you. I'm 36.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Gotcha. So what I'm seeing now is the youth, which is really cool to see, is these questions being raised. And it's like, yeah, why can't you work from home where your work-life balance is way better? It makes more sense. You can get shit done at home and, like, have a mental health day, you know, like, when mm-hmm. you're not working. Like, you shouldn't just have to be. I talk to my friend about this all the time. Like, why, if you're doing 3 hours of work a day and you're supposed to be sitting in a chair for the remainder of that 5 hours, just like by these fluorescent lights, just like wasting your life, like, this doesn't make sense to me. Like, you should be able to work from home.
Yeah, I think that I like it when people ask questions in general and people start thinking for themselves more of, how can I upgrade my life? I like that a lot. I think that's great. I will say, I do wonder what activities those people that so desire to have, you know, the so-called work-life balance better, I do wonder what that life does consist of outside of work. Because if it's just playing video games all day, or it's not getting after it, or the dream that they have, they're still afraid to go after it. That does concern me a little bit of, like, well, all right, now you have, you know, you have more time, a lot more hours in the day. How are you spending that time? Are you using it to go after that dream? Are you using it to develop that hobby? Are you using it to start that own business? Or are you just using it to relax? Like, I hope people use their, even if you do want to play video games all day, start a Twitch channel, bro. Start streaming that shit on TikTok Live, man. Like, do something more than relaxing, you know?
There's always a way. There's always a way to better your life and make some money. There's money out there, man. There's mm-hmm. money to be made. Make your life a little bit better, a little bit more satisfying.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I think it's great that young people as well, you know, people in Gen Z, I'm technically in Gen Z. I'm right at the cusp of being a millennial. But I think it's great that people Gen Z and younger too are asking these questions. I think asking questions is a really great start to thinking for yourself and upgrading your life. And I hope that the time that everyone is spending now at home, when they do get a remote job, I hope they're using it to, you know, at least get great stories in their life, going out, traveling with their friends, seeing the world, yeah. starting businesses, getting in the gym, getting after it, you know, getting up on stage, trying an open mic night, if that's something you're interested in. I just hope that people are using that time and squeezing all the juice that they can out of life.
Yeah, you're right, dude. Totally right about that. And do you think that COVID really knocked the wind out of the sail for people being social? Do you think a lot of people just feel comfortable staying home now and not as, like, eager to get out there and try new things?
You know, what's crazy, man. I'm seeing a trend in the exact opposite direction on, like, on the ground, especially teaching this stuff. It's weird, honestly. It's as if there's now this hunger to be in life with other people now.
Oh, hell yeah.
There's these clubs that are popping up. I don't know, you know, if you're seeing them. Where are you based at right now?
I am in a place called Arlington Heights. It's like 30 minutes out of Chicago.
Hell yeah. So you're still close to Chicago. Cool. So yeah. I don't know if you're seeing this. I think people in big cities are probably seeing this. In LA, for example, two clubs have popped up. One's called LA Chess Club, and the other's Venice Beach Running Club. And the whole point of these clubs is it's an excuse to get out there, be social, and start dating again in person. Like, fuck the apps. Like, get out there and talk to people.
Fuck those apps.
Wild.
Those apps are so... Oh God, it's a real problem. These apps, like, because you can just, when it comes to these dating apps, I don't know if you've used it, but it's like you can be so picky on the things that you look at, the most like minuscule thing. Oh, this person's eyebrow is raised a little bit too much. But if you met this fucking person in real life and their aura just captured you and their physical movements and the way they spoke and they had confidence, like you don't get that out of a fucking picture, man. So these apps are just like killing the chance that you had to meet this person in a fucking second like that. Oh, don't like the way they look right there. Swipe left. It just kills it.
I think a beautiful thing that COVID actually did was it took everything that was trending in perhaps a negative direction, that feeling that you just described, kind of that disgust on the dating apps, like, oh God, I got to keep swiping. Oh man, I thought I was having a good conversation and this person didn't, like, you know, this person didn't respond. Just all of the negative things that were in small quantity right when COVID hit. I think what happened when we all got locked in our houses, all of that got taken to the nth degree. So when a girl would, for example, in a big city like LA, it is not even an exaggeration now to say that a girl will start a new dating profile and within 48 hours she has 1,000 likes on her profile. That's not at all an exaggerated number. Before, right, maybe she had 100 or 200 likes on her profile. So what happened was everybody just, you know, due to boredom, I guess, everybody just started watching a ton of stuff on Netflix. Everybody started playing a ton of video games. Everybody started swiping on the apps all the time. It was the only way that you could even get social time or keep yourself entertained. You know, you have played video games and you'd be on the mic with your friends and stuff. And then I think what happened was people just got, especially women, I know so many women now who have just their notifications just turned off. They start a Tinder account, they have it that's fun for like 2 days, and they're like, this is, oh my God, I just keep getting my phone just getting lit off. Screw this, I'm just turning my notifications off. So if you're a guy that's trying to date a woman via Tinder, good luck. You're competing against 1,000 other guys and notifications that are probably turned off on the girl's phone. So now what I'm seeing is even women, I think, are a bit done with the idea of like, oh, I'm going to probably meet someone on an app. Is it 100% there yet? I don't know. But I'm seeing a burgeoning trend where people are like, you know what? Let's just go out and see and talk to people. Like Chess Club, bro, it's crazy. Literally what they do, they have a whole rented out venue every week. And it's free for women. I think it's like $60 maybe for guys. And they will set up like 100 different chess boards in this venue. You roll up and then you just talk to each other and you invite each other to play chess. And then you sit down and you just start playing chess. And low key, if you're single, you know, it's crazy. I've seen really attractive single girls that go to this event, meaning girls who aren't even there with their friends. They're just trying to go out. It's crazy. You sit across the table from this girl, you start playing chess, and then all of a sudden you almost find yourself on a first date. It's crazy. And
I love that.
It's amazing. And so I think one of the beautiful things about COVID is it just sped up this disgusting feeling that a lot of people had about meeting people digitally. And now people are ready to talk to each other again. And it's a really great thing. And as someone who I would consider myself, due to the fact that I teach people how to be social, I teach people communication, I consider myself, I watch these trends, I'm on the forefront of where things are going. I really do think that live experiences, I wouldn't be surprised if things like speed dating events start becoming more popular. If things like, hey, let's just get a group of people and go out to dinner with some strangers and, you know, maybe make some networking connections for business. I wouldn't be surprised if IRL, in real life, events where people are attending and are open to the possibility of having conversations with strangers, I think that's only going to get more popular.
Dude, you're almost making me, there's like a bunch of places to rent out here. I almost want to rent out a place and start like a live dating thing or like this chess thing just to see what happens, man. That seems like that's a fucking brilliant idea. It really is. Cool. It takes off the stress of like a first date. You know, it's just like we're here chilling and now there's a chessboard in front of us and we just casually talk and move these pieces. I don't fucking know how to play chess, but I'm talking to this hot chick right here.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a really great time. And due to the fact that there's a lot of people around, I think for girls, it probably feels a bit safer too. Like, okay, I'll go out, I'll maybe meet a cool guy or whatever. Maybe I'll give him my number, but like, it's a safe, I don't have to worry about my safety of like meeting a guy when I'm by myself alone in a bar where I don't know anyone. Like, okay, clearly here, everybody has either paid to be, all the guys have paid to be here, that, you know, they have some sort of social standing within the group. You know, they can't, there's nothing too bad that can happen to me because we're in a big room or a big, at the time when I was going to chess club, they kind of rented out like almost a warehouse space in the arts district of LA. So it was really cool, man. It still is pretty cool, but I wouldn't be surprised if more and more of those events don't start popping up and more people, especially due to the fact that there's a lot of people who are overstimulated with all, girls especially, are overstimulated with all the social media crap, all of the dating apps. It just, every, you know, how many people who are going to listen to this scroll through Netflix and it's almost mind numbing. You don't even know what to watch. Yeah. It's like, yeah. Can I just turn off my TV and just go talk to somebody?
Yeah, I just almost want to turn off everything. Sometimes I'll, every 6 months, I'll just get rid of all of my apps and just do this detox. I'll do a lot of fishing, a lot of going outside.
Oh, that's
if
cool.
You've never done this, I would recommend it. Dude, like, you know, you'll notice so much more, like, in your life, just the experience, just like a little experience. If you go out for a walk, you'll just notice things because that fucking thing is not attached to your hip. Like, just a little, like when you have your phone on you, there's just a little bit of stress, just a little bit, because you don't know if someone's going to message you. Like, everything is connected. Work's connected. Mm-hmm. Social media apps are connected. Friends are connected that might be mad at you. Your wife, mm-hmm. your girlfriend, yada, yada, yada. So if you disconnect yourself from that, like, it's gone. And you start noticing stuff in real life again. It's pretty surreal, man. I did it for like, so every 6 months I'll do it for about 3 months. And it's like, I don't know why I just don't do it all the time. Because I feel so good and so cleansed when I'm doing it.
I get that. I really get that. And I would imagine for a young woman as well, a young, attractive woman, that all of those notifications and all the stress of having to respond to people who expect something out of you, that just must be debilitating to a certain extent.
True. Right.
I completely resonate with that as someone who, I'm working on my phone a lot. You know, I'm coaching, I'm working over Zoom with people and stuff. I totally resonate with what you're saying. I've started to do a thing where when I'm done working for the day, you know, I just lock my phone and put it in the other room and just watch a movie. Just
beautiful.
Unplug from the constant communication with other people, you know.
Do you ever catch yourself, like, if you're like what you were just talking about, if you're watching Netflix and all of a sudden you'll just start scrolling through Instagram or something? Have you ever caught yourself doing that?
Yeah, I will catch myself. I'll do that more with YouTube, where I'll have YouTube on in the background or something. But never, if I'm locked in for like a movie, I really try to immerse myself in that experience. I'm trying to use like films and stuff as a way to get away from, to get away from the doom scrolling on TikTok and Twitter and Instagram and stuff, or X. I don't mean to disrespect our Lord and Savior Elon Musk. Excuse me.
Sorry, Elon. X,
you know. So yeah. I just like getting away from it. But absolutely, I mean, yeah, I definitely have in the past.
Yeah, and once I catch myself, it'll be so noticeable. That's when I'll start my cleanse. I'll be like, what the fuck am I doing, man? Like, I shouldn't be watching a movie while on a social media app. We're deleting this shit right now.
Yeah, I gotcha. Totally understand.
Yeah. I want to end like this, dude. I want your thoughts on Tony Hinchcliffe, the Kill Tony show. Just a way to end this. Cause he was just Madison Square. Is that where he was at?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. At the Trump was a rally. I don't know if it was. Oh, yeah, it was a rally, right? It wasn't an official like Republican or government event. It was a rally. Yeah.
I wanted to pick your thoughts on that and what you thought. That was like the timing of it, and if you watched some of the clips, like things he said. Do you think that he was the right person to do that? It's kind of curious.
The right person for what?
Because of what kind of comedian he is. He's a roast comedian. I'll just tell you my thoughts real quick. So he's a roast comedian, and you bring him up at a Trump rally, and like already people think you are very racist. Like if you identify with Trump, that's just, these are what I've noticed, what I've seen. Right? I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying anything. But then you have Tony Hinchcliffe, who's actually making like racial comment jokes. Like it's supposed to be jokes, supposed to be fun. I just think it was horrible timing. I think it was a horrible place for it to happen. I think it's a like it's toward the end of like Donald Trump was just on Joe Rogan's podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd imagine it went a little something like this, where Joe Rogan's like, oh, you got to get Tony Hinchcliffe. He's a killer. He's a murderer. He'll drive it home for you. The election. I mean, he's a great guy. The election will be in the bag. Like, just kind of pitching his boy to Donald Trump. And Donald's like, all right, we'll bring him on. And then Tony goes off and says some of this shit like Puerto Rico's an island of trash. And I think he says something about black people and some of black people and watermelon. I didn't see the whole thing, but I'm almost positive he says something like that. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I saw, I didn't watch his set from beginning to end. I definitely did watch some video clips of it. So I think I'm briefed enough on the context of what was going on.
Okay. Okay. And what are your, so as far as like, how, do you like Tony Hinchcliffe, first of all?
I think Tony Hinchcliffe is a brilliant comedian.
Okay. So do I. I think he's very good at roasting.
Yeah. He's one of the best, man. You look at like the art of roasting, whether it's like Don Rickles was one of the OGs on that. Tony Hinchcliffe's another good one. Andrew Schultz is also phenomenal with crowd.
No, he did really good, man. That Tom Brady one. I thought he did really good.
Oh my God. The Tom Brady roast with Tony Hinchcliffe. Yeah. That was absolutely incredible. I did watch that from beginning to end. That was amazing.
Yeah, that was real good. Okay, so now that we have your stance on Tony Hinchcliffe, what are your thoughts on him doing that rally?
I don't want to mind read Joe Rogan, like when you say that, you know, Rogan probably talked him up to Trump or something. I mean, I don't know. Tony Hinchcliffe has also had Adam Ray as Joe Biden and Shane Gillis as Donald Trump on Kill Tony. What I know about the entertainment industry and stuff, sometimes you do get booked last minute for gigs, but I wouldn't be surprised if they had Tony Hinchcliffe booked out for a while. I don't know if Rogan had much to do with it. Maybe he did, but I wouldn't be surprised if they had planned this for a long time. Like, we'll get a good lineup. We'll throw a comedian in there. It'll be fun. I can easily see. I think it's fair. Reasonable to say they had him booked out a while in advance, even pre Rogan. To me, the fact that he went on Rogan and then Tony Hinchcliffe went on at Trump's rally strikes me as more of a coincidence than it does like, I'm going to connect the dots from one thing to another.
Right. Right.
I thought Tony Hinchcliffe did exactly what Tony Hinchcliffe does, whether or not that's going to convert votes of people who weren't going to vote for Trump to vote for Trump. I don't know if that will accomplish that task, if that's what even they wanted to do. I don't know. I thought Tony Hinchcliffe did I think he did his job and he was himself on stage in front of an entire packed arena at Madison Square Garden. And some of his jokes from what I saw, some of the people weren't vibing even in the arena with what he was saying. And some of the jokes, they were getting a lot of laughs. So I don't know. Am I answering your question? I want to make sure I answer the question.
It's just like a, just want to know your thought process on it, I guess.
I think if you're a comedian that's willing to get political, you're going to open yourself up to controversy because the things you say, that is going to trigger an emotional reaction in people. And I don't think it's fair for comedians to pretend that that doesn't exist. I don't think if Tony went and like bitched on a podcast and was like, I can't believe the internet was upset at me for da-da-da, I'm a comedian. It's like, bro, you're at a fucking Trump rally. It'd be the same thing the other way, by the way. You're at a Kamala rally. If you're going to say some shit about Republican, you should expect to get some backlash. If you're going to be any man of consequence in life, whether it's a comedian, a musician, a politician, someone whose words matter to people, you're signing. You don't get to be mad or be indignant about the public response. And I'm not saying Tony's going to be this way. I just mean I'm not surprised that some people were upset. I'm also not surprised that I've seen videos online of Puerto Ricans saying, yeah, we don't give a fuck. He's a roast comedian. We knew what this was. So whether it was a good move by the Trump campaign, I don't know, man. I'm not a political strategist. Maybe they wanted him there to make people laugh and liven a mood that already seemed to be a pretty lively atmosphere at the rally.
True. It could even be like to just simply draw attention.
Yeah, and man, isn't Trump good at that?
It certainly did.
It certainly did. I mean, look, if people think Donald Trump is racist and they've decided that, regardless of who's there, they're going to say, they're going to find a way to call. That's the echo chambers that everyone's in right now. You know, if you think that, Kamala Harris is a communist, regardless of what she says, if you're that person who's dead set on, nope, I've decided she's terrible for the country and she's a communist, then no reasonable argument, no nuanced point is going to make a dent in that ideology, which it is. It's an ideology. In the same way that if you already have decided, you've watched some clips of Trump, you saw some colorful things that he said, and you go, yep, he's racist, 100%. If you've listened to MSNBC and all the other clips saying, oh, well, he's the Madison Square Garden rally, he's doing the exact same thing that the Nazis did in the late 30s. It's like, yeah, well, I mean, also, you know, JFK had a rally at Madison Square Garden. Also, the Democratic National Convention in the 90s that nominated Bill Clinton as the nominee was at Madison Square Garden. If you're already a little bit too sucked into the void of whoever give your attention to tell you what to think, it does not matter which comedian you have there. They're going to pull up some clip and say you did. Now, Tony's a roast comedian. Is he going to make race jokes? Yep. Is he going to talk shit about Puerto Rico? Yeah. Not out far of his brand. So I think he did. He did what Tony Hinchcliffe does. Like he's a fucking comedian. Now, is that a good move strategically for the Trump campaign? Now, are there probably some Puerto Ricans who might not vote for Trump? I don't know. I can't predict how those people act, but in terms of Tony Hinchcliffe doing what Tony Hinchcliffe does, I think he's a brilliant comedian. And I think that he's one of the best roasters. And it seemed like a lot of the jokes did hit and they were getting laughs in the arena, which as a comedian, that's all you can hope for that moment and that time. You're in a room of people and you get most, if not all of them, to be rolling in their seats laughing. So I hope that happened for Tony. I don't know. Outside of that, I have no idea.
That was a wonderful analysis you just did there.
Thanks. Yeah, we'll see. You know, hopefully I gain enough prominence at some point for people to misinterpret what I say. Wouldn't that be amazing?
that's a weird point, man. That's a good point, but a weird point. It's true.
If you're going to be anybody of content, people are going to have a thought about what you say. And you know what? Good. People are upset at Tony. Good. If people love Tony, good. At least have a thought about what he did, though. I like it when people think.
Yeah. Fucking beautiful, man. That was wonderful. Let's wrap it up there. I appreciate the transparency and being honest and you know, speaking your way through that. That was really good. That was a
I just tried to be as honest as like I said, when you say, was it a good move? It's like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe. You know, maybe Trump should be trying to get more Latino votes or more black votes, maybe. But at the same time, you know, if you know anything about Tony Hinchcliffe and you watch him, like, you know, I'm a child of gay parents. I was raised by lesbians. So it's like if Tony made fun of like gay people raising kids or something, I don't know, I'm a comedian, maybe I'm biased. I'm not going to take it personally because that's what he does. He punches at people and everybody gets it. Everybody can take it and everybody laughs. That's the point. You get the opportunity to laugh at yourself with a roast comedian. And you know, it's not like Tony hasn't elevated the careers of several young black comedians on Kill Tony. It's not like he's taken it's not like he's taken minority comedians on the road with him and paid them money, even though they're really early in their career. It's not like he's helped any, I'm obviously being sarcastic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he's gotten a lot of people started, you know, that had nothing. A lot of, diverse.
Yeah. David Lucas and Cam Patterson are fucking hilarious on Kill Tony. They're amazing. And before Kill Tony, I didn't know who either one of them were. So if you want to look at the character of Tony Hinchcliffe, I would look at the careers that he's helped people develop, because a lot of young comedians got their start on Kill Tony.
It would go back to the ideology where it's just like, once you have this notion in your mind that he's racist, nothing, like no matter how many jobs he got black individuals, it wouldn't fucking matter.
Trump is racist. Trump is racist. Oh, but didn't he get an NAACP award? Yeah, but he's racist. It's like, okay, well,
I try not to submerge myself too much into the politics just because of how fucking divided it is, and it's literally like pulling teeth. You know, like I'm not gonna be able to change your mind And nor am I trying to, but it's like we should at least be able to have a conversation like adults. And unfortunately, in a lot of that case, like, it's not there anymore. It's just not. It's like my team against your team. It's like the fucking LA Dodgers against the New York Yankees. I picked my team, and now it's like blue no matter who, and red till I'm dead or whatever, you know?
Yeah, and fuck that, man. I'd like it when people think. I like it when people think for themselves. And at the end of the day, man, it's, as a comedian, the whole landscape right now is so saturated with political comedy. Like, I don't even these days, I had some great political jokes. I don't do politics anymore on stage, at least right now, because I think people, you know, if anything, people want an escape from the 24-hour news cycle when they come to a comedy club. I like being silly. I like that. And, you know, at the end of the day, if people should be allowed to say what the fuck they want and speak their minds on stuff. And if people had a problem with Tony Hinchcliffe, by all means, talk about it. And if people love Tony Hinchcliffe, by all means, talk about it. But I hope that they're saying that because that's what they really believe and not just because they saw MSNBC say that Trump had a rally just like Adolf Hitler, you know?
Ooh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, that's a whole nother fucking conversation, too, with the news media outlets.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Brainwashing. But shit, man. Let's wrap it up here. We've been doing this for an hour 10. You're a fucking refreshing conversation, dude. I'm glad we're kind of like-minded. That's really cool. I'm glad we had this conversation. Parker Dean, how can people reach you? How can people find you? Like, give them your social media if you have anything out, like any websites.
Absolutely. If you want, I'm more than happy. I don't know, in your descriptions of your episodes, I'd be happy to email you some of these links as well. But I'm at the Parker Dean on pretty much every single platform. So whether it's TikTok or Instagram, YouTube, some baseball player took at the Parker Dean on X, damn it. But outside of that, it's at
that mother.
I know, right? At the Parker Dean on every platform. And then if anyone's interested in my coaching, you can go to consultotc.com or check out, maybe you can link this, if not all good too, but mouthpiecemastery.com/MM, mouthpiecemastery.com/MM.
Cool. You're the man, dude. Thank you. I just followed you on Instagram.
Oh, hell yeah. I'll follow you back. Let's see. Let's find Jay Barone. Where is he? Hold on. I got to find him. My phone's refreshing.
The Curiosity Chamber.
Hell yeah. Curiosity Chamber. Let's go. Got it. I'll follow you back. My phone loads.
Cool. Again, man, thanks for being here. Everyone listening, appreciate it. Thank you. And you know what? The next time you go open the door, lift that fucking handle upwards. All right?
Hell yeah.
Differently. Okay? Hell yeah, baby. All right. We're out of here. Peace.
Welcome to the Curiosity Chamber.